When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Great future. We're talking real money.
Wow, it's time again. Seems like just a few minutes ago we did a podcast, and look, we're back doing another one. Time flies when you're having fun or getting old. One of those two, not sure which. Maybe it's both. Yeah, sure, let's go with both. I'm Don McDonald in beautiful, not sunny Florida. How's it in Seattle today?
Not sunny, but sun is coming. You just have to wait long enough. That's all.
Till June.
There you go.
Or July.
Hopefully August by the time you're here. We'll get a couple breaks.
Yeah. Please don't get that 90 degree stretch you guys get whenever I come out.
I guarantee you this. At Lake Chelan, it will be 90 plus degrees.
Yeah, at Lake Chelan, I can be sure. I'm okay. But in Seattle, the last couple of times I've been out there for an extended period in the summer, the place has been hot as Hades and smoky as Hades.
Yeah. Well, I'm not smoking anymore, as you know, so that'll make it better there on the smoke. But the heat, can't do much about that. So we'll see.
Just don't lose the evergreens back behind the house or something. That'd be bad.
They're sucking down the smoke.
Hello, everyone. We're going to talk about money. Not smoke, not heat, not summer vacations, although we will be talking about summer vacation, too, at some point. I'm Don. That's Tom. I said that. We're going to talk about something really important. We know that you live to own the best house, the best car, the best clothing, the best electronics, the best iPhone, with the loudest ring, the best. What?
This is just like, could anything else go wrong? We got dogs. We got
the
ringing.
Dog will bark again. I pretty much count on it. I could be in the soundproof booth, but yes, I chose the soundproof booth. Gets a little warm over an extended podcast.
Yeah, I bet it
podcast.
Does. Sure,
it's okay for doing a commercial or something, but when you get in there and you do a podcast, it gets a little warm. So I'm outside the soundproof booth, just in the studio, which isn't soundproof. The dogs come through and Tom's phone rings. But today we want to talk about not the best of those things, but how do you pick the best investments? How do you pick, who do you trust to tell you the best investments, the best mutual funds, the best balance funds, the best index funds, the best of all these investment vehicle thingies, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, the bad news is there isn't.
Excuse me. There are articles all the time that
say
the best. I see them.
What happens is, and we've seen this from even products that we mention from time to time, because new things come along. It's like, yeah, it's pretty good. Maybe you should use it. People have a tendency to, I got to have some of that. Give me what's on aisle C. I got it. So I hate these articles. And let's talk about why I hate them. But a couple of them from Morningstar recently, one was entitled Three Great Balanced Funds. Now, balanced fund, the idea here is it has stocks and bonds in it, right? You're giving yourself some cushion with the bonds, and the stocks are going to give you the appreciation. And most of the time, it's somewhere around 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds, kind of balanced fund.
That's a typical mix. And what it means is that you end up with less volatility along the way. The bumps are smoothed out a bit.
And you know, if you've been listening to us for a while, we are never going to recommend a fund that is actively managed. I mean, when I say actively managed, stock picking, sector time, all that stuff. I got to be careful
DFA and Avantis are now using the word active, but they're not really active by our definition of
that's
active.
True. Yeah. So rules based, let me put it that way. But let's mention Jason Kephart. Let's mention the three great, he calls them great balance funds.
Okay. These are the best. No, these are the best.
And I'll start with the one that brings you the relief that you may need every day, Maalox. MALOX, the BlackRock Global Allocation. That's the ticker. That's
funny.
That's
a they great did ticker. That on purpose.
You think? Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the expense ratio is 84 basis points?
0.84%? Yeah, and it gets worse because in the description it says they use a Vegas style buffet of research. Now, well, when I go to Vegas for a buffet, exactly. I mean, it's like when I go to Vegas, I get the buffet, but I'm not doing it at the craps table. Oh. I mean, don't like it. Don't like
Why
the expense ratio.
Good.
Supported by a well-rounded group of fundamental and quantitative veterans and analysts.
Well, but
really
why
smart
do they
people.
Say it's good?
That's
they're
I just
underperforming
told you that.
The balanced index by funny. You know how much over 15 years they underperformed the balanced index?
0.084.
No, 0.75 approximately.
Okay, about was yeah, exactly.
Yeah, about the difference in fee.
Yeah. Okay. That one shouldn't be on the list. Then they mentioned the T. Rowe Price Balanced RP Backs. RPBAX, which is also a kind of
actively
spendy.
Managed.
Yeah, 0.61 on the expense ratio. Oh. It does have 20% of its money in international stocks. That's good. It's a little more aggressive as 65% of it's in stocks. And that's what the author calls keeping things spicy. Handful of T. Rowe's well-regarded active stock and bond managers build the building blocks. Like the managers behind the T. Rowe Price Blue Chip Growth, T. Rowe Price, et cetera, et cetera.
Now that's interesting. Yeah. On that one, they actually over 15 years outperformed the index by about 0.8%. But you know why they do that?
They're more in stocks.
It.
Yeah.
You just said it.
They're taking more risk.
They're taking more risk. Isn't that interesting? So wait, if you take more risk, you might make more money.
Though this is not about T. Rowe's multi-asset team being one of the best, as the author claims, then is what you're saying. It really
is
about the risk.
That it's about the risk. Yes. Okay. That is exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
Well,
then there's
the that really quickly.
Third option. VBINX. That's the Vanguard Balanced Index. You've heard us mention this many times on this show. 0.18. It is the quintessential 60-40, which is alive and well despite all the haters, according to the author.
Wait, they exactly match the index.
Yeah. It took its lumps in 2022, but has come back. The only issue the author has, and I have a little bit of this, is the U.S.-only focus. It does not have any international stocks, but that fee, 0.18, $18 for every 10,000 invested. Now, that's the kind of expense ratio we're looking for. So if I had to pick one great one out of that, it would be VBINX. It would not be the relief I get from Malox or the beating I get from RP Backs. No way.
Well, and I feel sometimes that Morningstar goes out of their way to make the actively managed fund groups happy, that they pander to them a little bit because they do sell advertising to those companies. And I think they feel like they have to keep saying, well, but yeah, there might be a good active fund out there, even though all of the data, the aggregated data says, yeah, maybe there's a good one, but most of the time you can attribute that to nothing more than sheer luck. And that over time, the farther out you go in time, the less an active fund performs. The indexes beat them over longer and longer periods of time, more and more consistently. So, wow, that is really, 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 really bad advice.
Yeah, and frankly, I think the Vanguard product has done a good job. If I wanted a balanced index fund, that would be the one to do. Okay, but then
index fund.
Yeah, exactly. John Reckenthaler moves on with his article, The Best U.S. Stock Index Funds. And yeah, I hate the title, but he looks at the S&P 500 funds, the total market funds, and small company funds. So he looks at three different parts of the market, which I think is important because, and this just to put this out there to be clear, if you're going to buy a total market fund, you don't need to buy the S&P 500, because you already got a lot of that in the total market. So you shouldn't, this gets, people get confused by this. You might want to own the small because you don't have much small in there, but that's another question. So, but he ranks these. It's interesting. He's got the Fidelity S500 fund, FXAIX, which we've talked about before, because it's only 0.02. Very, very cheap.
Very cheap.
The Schwab S&P 500, SWPPX, 0.2. Vanguard's S&P ETF, VOO, 0.03. I mean, I think any of these would be fine. But here's the thing. He also suggests the Fidelity Zero Large Cap, FNILX. Now, what I don't like about that is it's its own index. It doesn't track the S&P 500.
Yeah,
which makes me nervous.
It's not a major beef, though. I mean,
yeah, it's a small one, but not a major one.
Yep. Yeah, but the thing is that what's the difference between 0% fees and 0.02%?
Yeah, 0.02, but not much.
It's literally pocket change.
It is. So I think any of those are reasonable choices. I didn't realize the Vanguard 500 Admiral was charging 0.04, which
is twice as expensive. Yeah.
Why would you own that when you can get it for 0.02? So that's the S&P 500. I mean, what's your argument? I mean, I don't think there's any of those would be fine, I think, right?
Exactly. Because now we're quibbling over fractions of a percent for the what it amounts to almost exactly the same portfolio. There is there may be slight differences in an ETF. They can also emulate, like VOO can emulate.
Yeah.
Like Fidelity Zero does. But
moving on to the total market funds. I didn't realize, I guess, the Fidelity had a zero total market fund, FZROX.
FZROX, dude. FZROX.
Which has a very low tracking error. And the expense ratio, you're going to love this, 0.00.
What's the symbol again?
FZROX. That's pretty cheap. And if it does pretty well with the index, hey, what's wrong with that, right? I mean, that's all right. We haven't recommended that one in the past, but that's fine.
When you look it up and you see an expense ratio of dash.
line through it, man. You got to love that. So there's nothing wrong with that. And then they mentioned a couple other ones. Also the Schwab Total Market, SWTSX, with an expense ratio of 0.03. We've recommended the Vanguard Total ETF, VTI, many times, 0.03. I think any of these are fine. I don't think there's one. That's what drives me. And there'd be other products, by the way, that also have similar closely track the index and have very low expense ratio. I don't think there's a whole lot of choosing out of the total market ones there.
I looked up FZ rocks, and at times FZ does rocks.
It does.
But it's really curious because again, it's an emulating fund. It's not, they don't buy the entire. How many stocks would be in a total market index? 13,000 or something?
I bet it's not that because I bet they don't buy.
But I mean, just normally, like VT would probably be. I think VT last I looked was at least 10.
Was it 10? I was going to say 9. 10. So,
but the Fidelity Zero Total Market only has 2,800 stocks in it, so it doesn't own all the stocks.
Yeah,
and that shows up in its performance. It's very, very interesting to see the deviation in the performance when compared with the index. You'll see some years where it does a little bit worse and other years a little bit better when you would expect it to almost exactly track the index if it was the index.
Yeah.
In fact, that's generally what indexes do. So there is a little bit of deviation, but again, not a big deal.
All right. And then he goes into small. This is where it think we can make some arguments, but he's got the Fidelity Zero Extended Market, FZIPX, with a zero expense ratio and a Sharpe ratio of 0.50, which is very fine too. Then he got the Spider. Sorry?
We probably should explain what the Sharpe ratio is.
It has to do with my pencil,
it's a measurement of volatility versus returns.
Yeah, it's I shouldn't even have mentioned it. I apologize. The Spider portfolio,
well,
S&P,
you mention it, we have to clear,
I know,
that up.
S&P 600 ETF, SPSM, which also has a fine Sharpe ratio, and the expense ratio is 0.03, inexpensive there. Schwab US Small Cap ETF, SCHA 0.04. I think these are all fine. Vanguard's VB, which we've talked about on the program before, but I took the liberty of looking up, for example, in the small cap category, VB versus like an AVUV. Now, AVUV is a fund you've heard us talk about on this program before because it's managed by academic rules based. It's not an index.
So it's not going to be an index. They're not going to include it because of that.
Nope. It's not an index fund. But you would expect, if you believe factor investing going back almost 100 years now, that a fund that sort of has more deeply discounted value stocks in it and small would do better than a fund that doesn't care. It just owns the index, right? And I went back and looked just for the last, back to 2020, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, right? AVUV returned 16.6% a year. The VB, 10.2% a year, mm-hmm. which is a substantial difference. Now, you're taking more risk, right?
Exactly. Yep. That's where, and by the way, that's where the Sharpe ratio starts to come into play. Because, I don't want to give you the formula because your head will spin unless you're a math person. Remember, this is, these formulas are created by mathematicians. Yeah. This was work done by Professor William Sharpe at Stanford. And it is a formula for determining how much extra return, extra risk is providing you. It's a measure of whether or not you're being compensated for taking risk. So this is where the Sharpe ratio would come into play in things like the Avantis and the DFA funds, because they're adding risk. But the math has shown they're also adding returns commensurate with that extra risk. So taking extra risk has meant making more money.
Has. And not in every period and short periods of time, the index, all those caveats that we presented ad nauseum. And that's why when you say the best of anything, I think there should be a large asterisk, because the only difference for an index fund, truly, if they adhere to the index, would be the cost.
Yep.
That's it, because there's no difference. 100%. But then you have to decide, well, but do I just want to be an index investor and have, for example, in today's world, what, 20% of your money, if it's in the S&P 500, is in the five or six biggest companies? Do I want to be overweighted to those huge firms that have had a big run-up? Maybe, maybe not. Or do I want to, as you pointed, Don, be more factor-oriented when it comes to my investing? That's why I struggle with these lists, because it truly does depend on your portfolio, on your personality, and how much work you want to do. You could own the total world stock index and do no work, right? It's one fund. I would expect by adding some of these other factors, you make more money, but maybe say, well, it's very simple. I got it. I don't have to worry about it. That's why I struggle with the best list in general.
Yeah, I don't like best, because you always end up comparing. Maybe it's apples to apples, but it's, you know, Granny Smith's to Red Delicious's or
something.
Thank
you. That's good.
And so you're still not making an absolute comparison, unless you're going Granny Smith to Granny Smith, and then pretty much they're all going to taste like Granny Smith.
There we go. All right, got to kind of squeeze in a couple questions here. This one comes from Serdar in Salisbury, Maryland. You're going to love this, Don. Whenever the topic comes to bonds, you recommend BND. And that's not entirely true, by the way.
No, we don't. We do.
For simple things, yeah. Yes. I see how BND has broad holdings. I didn't realize it was 17,785 bonds. That's a lot.
It is a slew of bonds.
So you got diversification and you got low cost, low expense ratio, 0.03. But what do you think of BKAG? Fewer holdings than BND, but an expense ratio of 0.0. BKAG. That's not a fund I know.
It's the Bank of New York Mellon Core Bond ETF. And
I bet it has a bunch of strange stuff in it.
Yeah, currently they're not charging anything. Boy, talk
that's
about
not a
the
good
race,
business deal.
Talk about the race to the bottom. Yeah,
how about we give you something to buy our fund?
Yeah, we'll just go to zero. It has a fraction of the bonds. I'm just trying to, I've never looked at this fund.
So me either.
Quick analysis of it. It has not been around for a real long time. So it didn't get started until the bond market started unraveling.
And what percentage is in government holdings?
I have to go to the portfolio breakdown. That's my next stop. Again, Morningstar's servers, as they get more popular, their servers are getting so slow. Government is 45% of the portfolio. They are all investment grade. Most of the portfolio on the corporate side is AAA. Very little AAA, but AA, which can give you they're reducing quality. This is where they're improving the potential returns, is they're reducing quality on the corporate side. They have very little AAA paper, and AAA paper tends to pay the least.
Sure.
So they
makes
have
sense.
They have a higher yield than, or I think they have a higher yield than BND. I actually haven't looked at BND's yield lately.
Got to be in the threes somewhere, right?
No, I think it's in the fours now. The SEC yield on BCAG is 4.6, and
wow.
Yeah, Vanguard's is 4.5.
Yeah, so if I had to make a decision between BND and BKAG, I still would take BND.
Mm-hmm. I think I would too, because of the greater diversification.
Yep.
And we're getting into that. Whenever we get down to 0.1 or less on expenses, 0.1% or less, we're now really just quibbling.
Yeah, I think so. He also
says, 0.05 or less.
What do you think of VCIT? Which I did look at, that has 2,100 bonds in it, but it's corporate debt, which, as you may know, in a general sense, is going to be riskier than government bonds because government bonds are backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Corporations have good times and bad times, and we rarely see them coming ahead of time.
And that is reflected in its yield. The SEC yield on that is about 5.25% as of right
wow.
now. And they too tend to shoot for lower credit quality to get that higher yield. Their average rating is just above junk.
Nah, that scares. Yeah, I wouldn't be doing that. Again, and remember why we own bonds. We own bonds for stability. We own bonds because we wake up tomorrow and it's about the same price. I know you're going to say 2022 wasn't like that. That was a pretty anomalous situation. But even looking back over the last 50 years, bonds have been that ballast for you. Not we're not looking to make money here. And I think that's a fund where people would say, yeah, look, I'm making that much more until you're not.
Exactly. It's until you're not. If we want the perfect bond portfolio, if I was creating the perfect balance, I would skip corporates altogether, because I think
we used to do that. Yeah.
I think the risk, we're only throwing BND in because of the simplicity of it. If we really wanted to do this in the most pristine manner, we would have equity for your stock portfolio. We'd have diversified stock holdings, which expose you to the risks of corporations. And we would have 100% of the bonds in short to intermediate term treasuries only, to eliminate any risk of permanent loss. That's, you will still have volatility,
sure,
but you cannot lose the face value of those bonds. They'll
good
eventually
point.
Renew, or they'll eventually pay off at face value.
All right, we're running a little long, but we'll throw one more in. Mary writes us from State College, Pennsylvania. She says,
I've held State College there.
Apparently so. I've held FX NAX since 2000. You know that fund, right? Isn't that the Fidelity Total Bond? And I despise it. I've lost over $25,000 in that time. I'm begging you to explain the details of managing a 40% bond allocation in a portfolio, as I wish I'd sold the entire holding when learned the Fed was going to raise rates. I don't even see breaking even in my lifetime in this fund that I rolled over from my 401k.
I am so confused. How much does she have in this?
It doesn't say the total. It says she's lost $25,800 since 2000.
Hold on.
Since 2000, I mean, you should be in the green. Yeah, since 2000.
Since 2000, you should absolutely.
Bought it one really bad
day. There's something really wrong with these numbers, because 2000 was how many years ago?
I think it's 24.
Well, okay, this fund hasn't existed for that long.
Mary, you need to check your math. Or check your calendar.
Yeah, no, the fund hasn't existed. The fund's been around for like 12 years.
Okay, but let's just dispel this.
Let's
go back as far as you can.
I'll go back to 10 years.
Okay, which has been a horrible period of time for
bond prices. I'll go clear back to the beginning of the fund, which I think I can find. Oh, I have to go to this. Hold on. I have to switch my screens. And I'm going to go back to the beginning of FXNAX.
Isn't this the Fidelity Total Bond Fund?
Yes, I'm just trying to figure out. Well, it's the U.S. Bond Index. That's a max. I'm on the wrong chart. Okay. If you put $10,000 into that fund back in... Oh, it has been around. Why doesn't it have a 15? Oh, they made some changes. Okay. So she got in what year? 2014?
She says 2000. So
2000. I'm going to go back to 2000. If on January 1st, 2000, you had $10,000 in the fund.
Yep.
Today, you would have about $26,000 just from the price of the fund. Plus, you would have made the income over that time.
So I don't understand
great
math.
Income. So there's something wrong with the math.
Either totally that or she got the year wrong.
Well, it's really hard. The only period over which you would have suffered a loss is if you got in 2020.
I was going to say you could have bought at the absolute wrong moment in 2020.
Yeah, if you bought in 2020, you would have suffered a loss in principal. Hold on. I got to pull up the right number of about 10%.
10% since 2020. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, because
but now bear in mind, you had the income of 1% or so, maybe 1.5%.
Sure.
So that takes you down to about an 8.5% total loss over that period. So if you got it in 2020, yes, you have a loss.
I'm going to start.
Otherwise, if you got in at any point prior to 2019. You're at least at break even, if not at a profit.
I'm going to start another podcast. Maybe you join me on this one, Don, or maybe you don't, but it's bitching about bonds, baby. Bitching about bonds. I'm so tired of these bonds.
This is a podcast. This isn't a radio show, right?
Oh, good point. Yes.
So I can.
You can say whatever you're going to say.
I was going to. Never mind.
Don't say it.
This would be rude. I would get in trouble.
Yeah.
No, I would. It would be funny.
I know.
But if it was a comedy show, I could get away with it.
But
because like on Saturday Night Live, this could be the title of a financial show. You get a couple of women together and you got the name.
So if you want to know what Don was coming up with in his devious little mind, send us a note and we'll send it along to you. We're just not going to do it publicly. I think I know, but I'm not going to go there.
We've gone way long, haven't we?
I know we have. So thank you all for joining us. Appreciate it.
You want to add anything else or no?
I think Let's that's go. It. Bitching about bonds and booting out of here. Yeah, I think so.
We'll be back, though, doing that thing, that voodoo that we do so well, talking real money.
The opinions and views expressed on this podcast were current on the date recorded. Opinions, estimates, forecasts, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice, including any forward-looking estimates or statements which are based on certain expectations and assumptions.
Although information and opinions given have been obtained from or based on sources believed to be reliable, no warranty or representation is made as to their correctness, completeness, or accuracy.
Information presented on the podcast is not personalized investment advice from Appella Wealth. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for everyone.
This podcast does not identify all the risks, direct or indirect, or other considerations assumptions which might be material to you when entering any financial transaction.
Past performance does not guarantee future results, and profitable results cannot be guaranteed. We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. The podcast is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Wealth, a fee-only registered investment advisor.
Please see Appella Wealth's ADV Part 2A on our website for information regarding Appella's fees and services.
Appella Capital, LLC, DBA Appella Wealth, is an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The firm only transacts business in the states where it is properly registered or excluded or exempt from registration requirements. Registration with the SEC or any state securities authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Appella does not provide tax or legal advice, and nothing either stated or implied here should be inferred as providing such advice. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and important disclosure related to performance of any specific index or fund quoted in this podcast. Oh, I think I need a nap.